Hello and welcome to K-Botak, a short podcast about Korean cinema and K-dramas with me, John. This episode we're going to be talking about I Saw the Devil. This is the first of probably multiple episodes on the brilliant director Kim Ji-woon. Kim is known for I Saw the Devil perhaps first and foremost, but is also the mastermind of revered classics like A Tale of Two Sisters and A Bittersweet Life. He also directed the first Korean original for Apple TV Plus, Dr. Brain, which I covered on this show when it aired. A series that is as brilliantly entertaining as its name is silly, but I do like saying Dr. Brain. He has also done an English language film, The Last Stand, which I have not seen, but I do intend to do an episode on Korean directors doing English language films at some point and cover that alongside Stoker and Snowpiercer and Okja and stuff, so looking forward to tracking that one down. So Dr. Brain didn't make the huge splash that Parasite and Squid Game did, and perhaps Pachinko is doing at the moment, that Kim had reportedly hoped for. But it is very good, and for those now digging into his filmography, there is much to enjoy. The first film I saw by him was The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, but his recent films are really good too. So this episode will cover I Saw the Devil, which is a 2010 revenge horror directed by Kim Ji-woon and written by Park Hoon-jung, who went on to make New World, a brilliant film, The Witch, very fun film, and Night in Paradise, again, brilliant. Those are just three of Park's films, but he's got a really solid filmography. This stars Lee Byung-hun as Kim Soo-yeon, who is an agent in the National Intelligence Service, or the NIS, and Choi Min-sik as Chang Kung-chul, who is an academy bus driver and serial killer. So you've got two absolutely huge actors here. Lee Byung-hun, known for Joint Security Area, Bittersweet Life by the same director, Good, the Bad, and the Weird by the same director, Iris, the movie. He's been in Western movies like G.I. Joe and the unpronounceable Terminator movie from 2015. He was in The Very Good Memories of the Sword and The Age of Shadows. He was again in Magnificent Seven, another Western one. And recently he's been in quite a few quite serious movies like The Man Standing Next. I think that's a political thriller. And reunited with his JSA co-star Song Kang-ho in Emergency Declaration, an interesting looking film with a boring name. Choi Min-sik, obviously he is old boy. He was also in Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, Nameless Gangster, which I covered on the show, New World, in which he's brilliant. He's also dabbled in Western movies. He was in Lucy, a pretty confused film, but it was lovely to see him turn up, and The Admiral, and Tiger and Old Hunter's Tale. So you've got two absolute powerhouses here in terms of who you're actually watching on screen at a given time, and both are amazing. You've also got Oh San-ha as Chang Chu-yun, which is Soo-hyun's fiance, Chung Kook-kwan as the squad chief, Chang, which is Chu-yun's father, and Kim Yun-so as Chang Soo-yun, who is Ju-yun's sister. These are supporting characters who are nevertheless very important. Kim was required to make 7 cuts to this film, with the total runtime of removed material adding up to somewhere between 80 and 90 seconds. Considering what made it into this film, that must have been a gnarly minute and a half. But he was still required to make changes. Rotten Tomatoes gives this 81%. Metacritic is generally favourable, and film fan sentiment towards this usually seems to be really positive. It's seen as a genre classic, in many ways as an apotheosis of the revenge thriller genre, and in terms of what it achieves, taking the genre to its logical conclusion in the most brutal manner possible, it is undeniably impressive. Full spoilers are going to follow, so if you haven't seen this, then do continue listening at your own risk. I'll be spoiling pretty much the whole plot. So Chang Kyung-chul is a school bus driver who captures, murders, and dismembers young women with impassivity and regularity. He has a sort of torture dungeon set up at his remote house, and in the opening, we see an example of this monstrosity taking place. The movie establishes first that this woman is pregnant and her husband is an NIS agent. It is instantly appalling stuff, and you probably know if you want to tap out already, because it doesn't get any easier to watch. It gets much, much harder. This agent, Kim Seun, sets out on the trail of the killer. His immediate reaction is to desire and enact revenge, which sets out his character arc straight away. He's trained and armed, he is connected, and he has the means to exact vengeance on a scale that most people do not. Kumja in Lady Vengeance takes 13 years to get revenge on another Choi Min-sik villain. This NIS agent is straight on the trail. So he gets all these suspects, and he starts materializing at their homes or workplaces to brutalize them and extract information, in a montage that presents as sometimes darkly humorous, and even quite satisfying, as you see all these perverts and abusers getting absolutely decked in. And the film is definitely going to get you for feeling that way. But for now, you sit back and just sort of enjoy the rampage. He narrows it down to Kyung-chul, and begins this game of cat and mouse, where he captures this vile man quite easily. This isn't a movie about him chasing the guy down, but then begins a cycle of inflicting horrendous violence on the man, and then letting him go, deciding that he will attempt to project the inner pain he now feels onto its perpetrator by making him endure protracted and extreme agony and fear. He wants this man to be afraid of him. It is clever how the movie frames the different beats in this journey of revenge, and like I say, spoiling all the plot points here, but it is a decade old or more film, so you know, again, watch it and come back if you still hung on during the first spoiler warning. But when he first catches up with Kyung-chul, this bastard, this awful man, is about to force himself on another young girl, and you're watching, rooting for Seon to burst in and put a stop to it, as well as show this serial killer what for. I mean, at this point, I would imagine a lot of people watching are thinking, you know, get in there, Lee Byung-hun, and kick his teeth in. Then he starts catching up to Kyung-chul when he's on the run in various places, and you see Kyung-chul as he very much becomes prey from Predator. He eventually hides out at an equally perverse friend's house, who is a cannibal, of all things, and the movie delivers what is probably the final time it lets you be on Seon's side, after a tense struggle where he eventually overcomes Kyung-chul and he batters him again. Now, I mentioned you might not be on Seon's side from now on. That doesn't mean I was ever, ever on Kyung-chul's side. There is a mildly frequent take that you start to feel sorry for Kyung-chul throughout this. No, never. Not even a little. Do you remember what he did? You did watch, right, what he did at the beginning of this movie. Or just listen to me talk about it. In my opinion, he's beyond any pity. It is true that for the health of society, we cannot participate in a bloodthirsty public execution. However, knowing that is different to actually feeling sorry for a rapist, a murderer, a torturer, who for whatever reason ends up knowing pain and suffering themselves. I just don't have it in me, and I don't think that is the point of this movie, as Kyung-chul keeps doing awful things. He doesn't repent. He is a reptile, a monster through and through. The world would be better if he had never existed, but he does. And now the question is, what will happen on this collision course with a highly trained and violent man? The point of this movie is the price of revenge for Seon. It's twofold. he becomes monstrous himself and loses even more. Everyone will have a different point of the movie where they stop empathizing with him. And for me, that was when he breaks the jaw of Kyung Chul's fellow villain, the cannibal, in a hospital, in a long and excruciating shot as he pulls this man's mouth apart. There's a really common threat in lots of Korean movies, like gangster movies and stuff, about ripping people's mouths apart or similar, you know, ripping people's mouths off and stuff. And now for my sins, I have seen a depiction of that. It's really, really difficult to watch. And after this point, it goes downhill too really fast. Kyung Chul has realized that Soo-yeon has put a tracker in his body to find him wherever he goes. So he goes and gets it out with laxatives in a mortifying scene of intentional and chemically enhanced bowel voiding, and heads to the house of the police chief, Soo-yeon's father-in-law, clobbers him with a dumbbell, and then kills his other daughter. And this is why even the bloodthirstiest person shouldn't be able to cheer on Soo-yeon, because the price he pays for revenge is so very steep. He loses so, so much. And this is the pretty clear message from the film about what happens and what you become if you choose to follow this path. Soo-yeon does kill Kyung Chul in the end with this gruesome Rube Goldberg machine setup where he rigs a guillotine to behead Kyung Chul when the door to his torture dungeon is opened, which turns out to be by his visiting family he hasn't seen in years. So they walk in to see his head severed from his neck and roll across the floor towards them. Very intense. And meanwhile, outside, Soo-yeon finally breaks down. I did mention revenge horror when I described the movie, and it really is a horror film. It's body horror, it's the horror of what happens to a person consumed by revenge, as well as the more mundane and more painfully immediate horror of how you would react to the absolute worst thing imaginable happening in your life. A 2019 Paste article called this the best 2010 horror movie, and it said, quote, "I Saw the Devil examines what happens when those in the societal hero role falter in the purity of their motivation and aren't able to put the needs of the many above their own need for satisfaction," end quote, which obviously we saw with the death of his sister-in-law. Another person suffered who didn't need to. There is also a theme that the justice of coppers and courts is fallible, and even the NIS agent, the guy on the inside of it, didn't feel it was enough, which is chilling in itself. You know, when you see these movies, you hear these stories, and you think, well, this person knows how the system works, and even he doesn't, you know, think it's good enough. But you either have to just hope that the system gets the right guy and can get them off the streets, take them off the board, or destroy yourself and potentially everyone around you, making absolutely sure, if you have that option in the first place. Vigilante justice in reality isn't like Batman. It is committing to doing the most awful and probably last thing you will ever do in order to get revenge that, for whatever reason, you think society is not equipped to mete out. I'm not saying this, you know, to critique it either side. I am saying that these are weighty themes, and wherever you come down on them, which will in turn depend on where you're from and what your experiences have been, because people listening to this may be from very different parts of the world where and may have, you know, different experiences based on who they are in dealing with all of those organs of justice and the law. And it's going to be absolutely different for anyone. But I mean, you know, wherever you sort of land on this, it'll inform your experiences, and it can lead to the very sobering and depressing conclusion that at the end of the day, the worst thing in the world has already happened, and there's no undoing it. There's no system you can live in the world that can undo something that awful. So, yeah, I mean, Lee Byung-hun's character, Soo-yeon, is basically consumed in the course of this movie, and that process is marked by a blood-soaked odyssey of cruelty that will make you balk even if you have no sympathy for the person it's happening to, which, like I said, I did not. However, it is, you know, it's I don't consider it a torture porn movie or gore for the sake of it. It's not exploitative. It is using very, very stark and striking and disturbing imagery and themes to confront you with some powerfully interesting questions about the nature of revenge and heroism and people's place in society and justice and, you know, public execution, you know, in that kind of very meta way with the audience watching and how they respond. And it's endlessly interesting to think about and read about. You know, there's a lot of good stuff out there online about this movie. It's also a brilliantly made film. It's beautifully shot by Imo Gay, who is a frequent collaborator of Kim, who also shot Asura City of Madness, brilliant crime film I recently covered, as well as No Tears for the Dead, which I also recently covered. The performances by Cho Min-sik and Lee Byung-hun, as you can imagine, are superlative. Che turns in probably the ultimate version of the irredeemable villains that he's often portrayed, and I think he's done less evil, you know, killers and gangsters and stuff since this movie. Perhaps he felt that he had said what he needed to say with this kind of character. Lee Byung-hun, he puts those kind of depthless eyes that he has and those quiet glowers to really good use. He effortlessly shows his character's expressions with a minimal amount of dialogue. He's a man who can just do so much with a look, you know, with his face, with how he's standing. You know, very, you know, he's one of those guys that you could have put him in the silent movie era and he would still have absolutely ruled, you know, because of how physical he is as an actor. Yeah, brilliant as expected. It's trading heavy themes and does so successfully. It deserves all the plaudits that have been thrown at it. The only thing is that I just stopped enjoying it about half an hour from the end, when the futility and the gore of Seon's rage-filled quest for vengeance just got too much for me. It actually made me quite unhappy, and I felt disturbed by it. Perhaps the movie is just working as intended there. It certainly earns the label of horror movie in that regard. I think you have to have a strong stomach to get to the end of this and just be calmly applauding the technical and artistic accomplishments here, though. It is a lot. At the same time, it's absolutely unforgettable. I think that if you've listened to the end of this and you haven't switched off, you know, in revulsion, just at the notion of some of the things that that go on in this movie, then perhaps you would get something from it, and you know, it would be a movie that you could appreciate just as a statement and a piece of art. I think it certainly deserves at least a chance in that regard. Kim hasn't plumbed quite these depths of violence since, despite some intense scenes in like Age of Shadows. The films that the writer Park Chan-hung has made have kind of made several attempts to do so and to examine violence in this way to more varying effect, and I would love to cover some of his films in future. But that's I Saw the Devil for you. The hell of a movie, to be quite honest. You can follow this show on @KBotakPod on Twitter and Instagram. Retweets and shares are much appreciated, and best of all, if you like the show, please do subscribe, leave a review. That would be really lovely of you. Thank you so much for listening. Cheers.